Oh, yes, we certainly do.
Good morning. Today is June 4th. I know there's a tremendous amount of educators and superintendents in our audience this morning. This is, and I don't know how they have time with all the graduation stuff happening, but this is the Education Subcommittee for the Joint Ways and Means Committee, and welcome. We're here to talk about a topic that, we're going to have public hearings on Senate Bill 418 and House Bill 3166. We have several members of our of the Capitol here and of the body that want to testify. But before we start, we get to hear our own expert, Doug Wilson. So he's going to get us started, and then we'll get to testimony right away.
Madam Chair, you might want to open a public hearing on
both
Senate
bills. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 418 and a public hearing on House Bill 3166.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, there are sort of, on Senate Bill 418, there are sort of two issues. There is the core, or the bills that currently stands with deals with accelerated learning, and there's also an amendment that has been posted, I believe it was yesterday, dealing with the fifth year high school education issue. So there are sort of what I would like to do at the committee's pleasure, would like to have, I guess, given the members that are in the audience that want to testify, talk about the fifth year issue first, and then I also have Hilda Roselli here to talk a little bit about the bill itself and what's in it. So you have both issues in front of you. So I believe we have Senator Hass and Representative Johnson here to if they want to testify, and Senator Gelser, and I know Representative Springer also wants to testify. So is Representative Johnson and Senator Hass may want to come up first.
You could take your coffee there, Senator. We're not that strict of a classroom. And Senator Hass, if you wanted to go ahead and start.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Kump and Co-Chair Monroe and members of the committee. Mark Hass from Washington County. I want to speak to the core of what this bill is. It's very, very important, and I'd like to kind of, if I could, set the stage and give you a kind of perspective on it.
And Senator, this your reference is to Senate Bill 418.
Senate Bill 418.
Thank you.
Yes. When we passed by an overwhelming vote in 2011, putting 40-40-20 into state law, I've been spending a lot of time looking at ways to get there and going to conferences and doing all of these things. And when I look at the lowest hanging fruit, it often comes back to how we can get more kids earning relatively inexpensive college credits at an early time in high school. And this bill,
thank you,
the essence of this bill is the lowest hanging fruit available. This is, Senator Thompson, this is like an 18-pound pear right at eye level. And
I'm glad you gave the senator that reference.
And frankly, we tried to get at this bill in 2013, but it's very tricky. But you all know that nothing in this building is easy. The financing is tricky, and we ran out of time and passed Senate Bill 222, which earmarked some money for the existing dual credit programs, but also set in motion a study and a task force that was chaired by our Chief Education Officer, Nancy Golden, and included legislators. Representative Huffman was on it, I was on it, a few others, some business leaders, and some educators. And we spent about 18 months going through mountains of research and looking at what other states were doing, calling out the best practices from those states and from national consultants. And we came up with a unanimous recommendation that is embodied in Senate Bill 418. And right now, Oregon doesn't do a terrible job with dual credits. But generally speaking, a lot of the kids that avail themselves of those dual credits today tend to be kids who are more motivated, their parents are motivated, are better connected, and a whole lot of students, the majority, in fact, are are just sort of left out. And that population needs more than just an opportunity that's out there. They need to be pushed. And this bill pushes them and says, no, you will earn 9 credits, or you will earn 12 credits, or whatever the best case is. And the reason for that is because the research is just amazing on what happens. Mm-hmm. The world changes for high school students when they know that they have 9 credits in the bank at a college, because so many of these families do not have college in their family culture. But now they've got their foot in the door, and the research shows that when kids have college credits that they've earned in high school, they're much more likely to go to college, get into and out of with a completed degree or certificate. And so that's the essence of what this bill tries to do. It incorporates some changes that are necessary. The mechanics, Hilda Roselli, who was our administrator on the task force, can walk you through that if you'd like. Financing is obviously the key here. As I was reminded by a student from Corvallis the other day in the Senate Ed Committee, that if you want to make money, you have to spend money. But the research is clear, and when I look at us getting closer to 40-40-20, earning more college credits in high school is the lowest hanging fruit out there. So I hope you look favorably on the core part of this. That's what I want to talk to you about today. And don't lose sight of what the underlying bill is here, because I don't think there's a superintendent in Oregon who doesn't think this is an important role for our high schools to be better at.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask our witnesses, I just did a fast calculation with how many people we want to testify, absolutely no more than 5 minutes in your presentations, because even at that, we won't have much time for any discussion. So, and Senator Hash, you're well within 5 minutes.
Thank you. I do my best.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Let's do it.
Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Mark Johnson from House District 52. Pleased to be here today. The dash, I believe, 10 amendments to Senate Bill 418 came from myself and some others who are also interested in this topic of dual accreditation, of helping our kids to acquire credits that can be helpful and beneficial for them. But this amendment is targeted at trying to address a situation that has developed in Oregon over the past, potentially several years now, where some districts are, again, in the best interest of their students, are encouraging those students who may have completed their graduation requirements, academic requirements, to earn an Oregon diploma, are encouraging them to not actually graduate but remain members of the district so that they are continuing to be viewed as students in the eyes of our funding formula, hang around for another year, take community college courses while they are still students within the school district, and then as a result of that, they would be better prepared to go forth and prosper and so forth. Great ideas, great ambitions. Some of these programs, as you'll hear, I'm sure we have proponents behind us who have been very successful with connecting with some perhaps at-risk students who maybe just might have had difficulties in making those transitions. I think the programs also are, again, I would say, a direct response to, as we heard in the Secretary of State's audit of our community college system just last week, that the support structures and some of the systems at the community college level in Oregon are severely lacking. We are really lacking student support, wraparound services to help students matriculate from high school to post-secondary and do it in a way where they don't fall through the cracks and so forth. So these programs are very well intentioned, and I think some of them have had some great results. The problem is they're just not fiscally sustainable. In the last biennium, or in this current biennium, Brian Reeder is here from ODE to speak to this. It's our estimation that they're about $18 or $19 million is coming out of the state school fund because they are still registered as students. And I would say that they're not only probably getting ADM, but some of these are getting ADMW, whether they're ELL students, they could be a small school supplement. There could be a variety of ways that they're being viewed in the formula. So it's just not sustainable because we know going forward there's a tremendous amount of interest on the part of districts to expand these programs even more. Just last week, Philomath, I believe, voted to do that in their in their district for next year, and I just wanted to read a couple of quotes that I thought were very interesting. I don't know if you guys read this report. I forget if it's in the Oregon Live or where it was, but here was a board member in Philomath who stated, "Our general consensus in all of these conversations was this is not an appropriate use of K-12 money. We acknowledge that, but at the same time, there is a reality that all of our neighboring districts are doing it. So you can't blame them. The reality is, unfortunately, the state legislature has not stepped in." So that was a quote from one of the board members in Philomath as they had their debate last week. But I thought the quotes from the actual superintendent of the district were especially enlightening, where he says, "I can't argue with what you're saying about this money coming out of the K-12 fund because it does. If every school district in Oregon did this at the percentages we're talking about with half of the eligible kids or whatever, it would be another $200 million or so out of the state school fund. Currently, it's only about $20 million because not everybody's doing it." So again, I think those quotes just illuminate the vast interest that there is. And again, this is well-intentioned interest to provide these kind of wraparound services, keep these kids close to the nest for another year, if you will, where they can grow up and be ready to fly and flourish. But again, it's just not sustainable if we roll this out statewide. So what this bill, or pardon me, what this amendment to Senate Bill 418 would do is it would cap the current programs at the level that they currently are in place right now, meaning if you don't have a fifth-year program in place, you couldn't add one going into September. So it's, first of all, it's a cap. But then it's what I would call a cap and glean, meaning we're going to convene a work group, okay, a statutorily authorized work group with members from ODE, from the HEC, as well as the chief education officer, and we really want to have the members of these districts that are currently using these programs come together over the next year. What is it? What are these wraparound services? What are these great components that we can glean or pull out from what you're doing? How can we make those available statewide in a way that's fiscally sustainable? That's the charge. And I think, and then at the end of the three-year time period, these programs would phase out. So within 3 years, we've got the time to work together as a state to see what measures can we put in place both at the K-12 level, perhaps through expanded Aspire options, additional support services at K-12, or and at the community college level too. As you might know, in the HEC budget, there's an ask, I think, to ramp up significantly at Aspire programs at the community college level to begin to provide those same sort of services for students to make sure that they aren't falling through the cracks, that they have one-on-one relationships with a counselor, with a mentor, someone to help them excel. So that, in essence, is what the amendment is all about here. But I guess I would just close with this and say, you know, as we strive to do our jobs as legislators and create policies that provide positive outcomes for all Oregonians, I think it's really important that we address this issue this session. I really think it's important that we address this issue now. And I think that you will certainly hear from some today who believe that we should maintain the status quo and enable those that currently have these fifth-year programs to continue with them while they engage in a good faith effort to try to find out how to make them sustainable. But I really believe that as we look at this situation through the equity lens, as we do so frequently in this building, we've got to apply that to some good faith efforts to crafting an education policy that can make these benefits available for students statewide. Whether you're in Burns or Baker or Medford or Klamath Falls or Portland, I think we should be able to replicate this same sort of nurturing, sustaining ability, you know, services, wraparound services for kids to help them make that transition. So I will.
Representative Johnson,
the end of my time.
You're done. Representative Huffman has a 10-second question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume that Brian Reeder is on to comment. And Brian, I assume you heard Rep. Johnson's.
You can talk to him when he gets up here.
Well, I want him to be prepared. On the full funding, does the fifth year include ADMW? What all's involved in that? I think it's important. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Roblin.
And my question.
You get 30 seconds,
too. You have the way it's written, they have to, the same number of kids will be taking it next year that we're taking it this year.
Correct.
So my concern would be, we've already done scheduling, they've already been working with kids. If a school actually increased the number, like say 3 or 4 people, would they have to undo those people for the next term, or would they get to let anybody that is scheduled for next year, even though it may be a slight increase, be able to continue?
At this point, the bill says, or the amendment says, that if you don't currently offer a program in this academic year, you wouldn't be able to add in September.
I'm talking about those that are in it.
That are in it, absolutely.
And, yes. But the way I read it, it says that won't increase any. Is that increasing any schools or increasing any students? Because if they had already scheduled a student, it may increase students without increasing schools. That makes me a little concerned, just because scheduling has already been done. And
I agree totally, Senator, through the chair. The intent was just to not add new programs. If there would be additional students, I think, that already are in view or have been contacted or enrolled, as you say, and there's staffing in place for them, I don't think that should be precluded.
Thank you. Just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Senator Roblin. Senator Monroe, Co-Chair Monroe.
Yeah, this is a budget committee. And you haven't really spoken to the issue of, it's a goal for all of us that more students get more college credits early on and so on. But what would the budgetary advantage be of your approach with your amendment versus the fifth year that many school districts are using today?
Co-Chair Monroe, I think Brian Reeder can certainly answer that, but I would say that right now we know that, and he'll verify this, I believe it's about $18 or $19 million in this biennium is going into fifth-year programs. That will only get more in the biennium to come because, as I said, Philomath has already signed up. Portland is very interested in adding this. My superintendent in Hood River County has a program that he's ready to recommend to us school board members to adopt for next fall as well, so it will only get worse. Having said that, the wraparound services we're talking about in the HEC budget for the ramping up the Aspire program, I think, is about a $250,000 or $70,000 ask. I think that should be expanded. We talked to Representative Buckley about that. But that's, in terms of numbers, I guess those are the numbers I could throw out there right now for you. And again, that money comes out of the state school fund currently.
But if this program goes away and we tell those districts that are currently doing the fifth year, you can't do that anymore 3 years from now. And those students then are getting their college credit at the local community college.
Mm-hmm.
What's the advantage of that in terms of the overall cost to the state?
Okay. Very good question. Because these students are not allowed to actually graduate, they can't access any financial aid for community college. Okay. It all has been on the nickel of the state school.
No Pell grants?
Correct. You can't, you're not eligible for Oregon Opportunity Grant. You're not eligible for federal grant through the Pell grants and so forth. So it's all on the state nickel, if you will, but it's at the full ADMW. It's not, or ADM. It's not at the actual cost of what college tuition or community college tuition would be, which is obviously, I believe, is at a lesser level than what full ADM would be for a student as well. So it's a more expensive way to pay for community college. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And while we bring up our next two people, and that will be Representative Springer and Senator Gelzer, the comment that I would make is that we can't make an assumption that that's going to cost more at the K-12 level than at the community college level. I know one of my districts contracts with a community college, and they pay $1,500 per term for per student, and they can take as many credits as they want. And so that figure definitely is and probably is less than if you paid community college tuition. Senator Gelzer, is it all right if we have our committee person testify first, or are you okay?
I'd like to defer.
Okay, thank you.
And I need to be up in judiciary in a minute too.
You're on.
Vote because of the deadline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Comp, Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for your record, my name is Sarah Gelzer. I'm the state senator from Senate District 8, which includes Albany and Corvallis and Philomath and a bunch of other places. First of all, as it relates to Senate Bill 418, I wholeheartedly support the underlying bill in the Senate Education Committee. I was part of an effort to revive it when it accidentally went to sleep, but we've brought it back to life, and I do hope that that underlying bill moves forward. As it relates to the fifth-year program, I absolutely agree that the program and the way that it's structured is unsustainable, and that there needs to be work to put parameters and sideboards on the program. One of the problems that we have is that what one district calls a fifth-year program is not the same thing that another district calls a fifth-year program. And while it is true that there are some districts that hold a kid and say, don't take your high school diploma so that you can go and have a year of community college, that is not what all of these programs are. And I want to explain to you what it is in my district, in the Corvallis School District. In our district, we are in our second year. It's something that's called a Running Start program. You're going to hear in a few minutes from Brian Reeder about numbers. The department sent out questions and said, how many people are enrolled in your fifth-year program? Districts did not understand what that question meant. So Corvallis sent in a number that was something like 92. All 92 of those kids were not all kids that were in their fifth year of high school. A number of those kids were in their second, third, or fourth year of high school and didn't have college credits. In fact, half of them. If you add in the kids that have modified diplomas that didn't have a regular diploma, that had to be served by the district until they're age 21 anyway, you're looking at the majority of those students, or not extra fifth year students that are coming in. So we need better data where people know which question that they're answering. But in our district, our Corvallis School District, this is being used as a credit recovery program. They are actually reaching out and finding kids that started their high school in the ninth grade. They're reaching out and pulling them back in as sophomores or as juniors, recognizing that they weren't doing well in the comprehensive traditional high school. They're going to the alternative high school and also taking classes at the community college. It's a credit, and it's keeping these kids in school. It has destigmatized our alternative education program. And 2 years later, we have seen the results. Our high school graduation rate, four-year cohort graduation rate, has gone up by 12% to 84% because of this program. Now, in the House Ed Committee the other day, someone asked, how do you get to that number? The way you get to that number, if you look at a district our size, when you are proactively going out and pulling kids back out off the street who otherwise would not have gotten a high school diploma, and you graduate them and walk them off the stage, you get a handful of kids, you get that increase. That is exactly what we're supposed to be doing. And that's why I'm concerned about the Dash 10 amendments that are before you. To throw every program out in 3 years throws out the very good with the bad. I don't want to lose that 12% increase in high school graduation. These are the most at-risk kids that aren't the kids that are great candidates for dual credits and accelerated learning. These are kids that have been in juvenile detention. These are girls that have babies. These are kids that are homeless. These are kids that are the most challenged and the most at risk. When we heard this in the House or the Senate Education Committee, we didn't move the bill forward, and what we committed to on the record was these superintendents from this area and others who are interested coming together, that I would donate one of my February bills to put significant sideboards on the program moving forward. The superintendents were not comfortable with a statutory work group, particularly one led by OEIB, because of the way that this came forward. We had a situation where you had officials from OEIB on the record saying that my superintendents were unethical. Increasing high school graduation rates by 12% is not unethical. That is revolutionary and a good thing to do. We need these people to not be scared when they come to the table and be able to have a good conversation. I did speak with Representative Buckley yesterday, and I have submitted another amendment to this bill that would simply say for the next school year, and to show you the total good faith effort, I haven't talked to Philomath yet, but this would impact Philomath. No new school district that has, no district that does not have a program this year can start one next year. That gives us a complete moratorium on growth for the next year. You have my commitment that I'm giving one of my two bills to bringing significant sideboards in February with a relating clause that holds me and my folks accountable, because it will be in the system, and I know there are people that are concerned about this. But it allows us to do this in a thoughtful way with good data, where we can bring people to the table in good faith and make a smart decision in February without risking hurting kids. I'm not willing to let go of a single one of those kids that's going to walk across the stage this week and get a high school. I mean, if you meet these kids, it is remarkable what we have done for these kids. We can't give it up. And I think we can slow down, not shut it all down. And trust me, trust my word, trust that I'm bringing this bill support the arrangement that we made in the Senate Ed Committee, and I will bring back sideboards, and if I don't, you can shut it down.
Thank you, Senator, and if you need an extra bill, I'd make that same commitment with you that if we whatever we need to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I apologize that I have revenue. To run up and protect our nail guns.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah.
And you did stay with barely within your 5 minutes. Representative Springer, regretfully, that's what you get to.
I'll take what she didn't use also.
No, she.
Thank you. For the record, Sherry Springer, State Representative, House District 17. So what I want to talk about, and we're talking a lot of policy in a Ways and Means Committee, which is
we like
odd,
to do that.
Odd for me, because this is a budget committee. But since this amendment first shows up here, we need to have a policy discussion. And so a couple things that I want to mention about the program. I'm totally on board with the idea that we need to look at this. We have students that this was designed for to catch. I remember my third year on a school board, and I got on the school. Everybody always asked me, why are you on the school board? And I said, to make good decisions for my kid. I want to be a part of the process and make good decisions for my kid. Year three on the school board, it dawned on me I wasn't on the school board for my kid because my kid had somebody at home advocating for him, had two parents advocating for him. So I told people, I said, I'm on the school board because I'm advocating for the kids that don't have somebody else advocating for them. And this is what that bill is about. It's about advocating for those kids that don't have somebody else advocating for them. And in the program, sometimes we get those kids that have somebody at home advocating for them. And so I want to caution us to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. This is a good program. So a couple things that I've heard on the policy front that I think that we need to really look at and parse away a little bit. I heard in testimony the other day that that districts make about $4,000 per student in this program. I got to tell you, my superintendent's in the room. His phone lit up in about 2 seconds, and I said, are you making $4,000 per kid? That is absolutely ridiculous. He said, no, I'm not. I said, I want to see some numbers. So we're going to talk about that. There are some erroneous beliefs, quite frankly, that I think have been started to frame this discussion, and I want to bring us back to how we get the kids we need to get into a program and move them towards 40-40-20. One of the reasons this program succeeds and students succeed is you still have high school people wrapping their arms around students, checking in, advocating for them, seeing what it's like, just having that relationship that is built in a high school, not in a community college setting, just by the very nature of it. I talked to somebody recently, have a friend. Both parents are educators in the Lebanon School District. They're good parents and do good things for their kids. And their oldest son, frankly, does not fit in the system. He absolutely doesn't fit in the system. So at 16, and again, we're throwing everybody in the same pot. He's not a true fifth-year student, but we're talking about programs that impact him, that would impact him. At 16, he didn't fit. Good kid, on the spectrum, but he didn't fit. Went on to community college, left the high school physically completely. He's doing phenomenal. He's doing phenomenal. So we need to think about this, and I've heard a lot of, here's the data, and here's 4,000, too many students, and this amount of money. And those are great pieces to look at. But I think when we look at, jump so far ahead in our discussion that we don't look at the path to get there, we're missing a lot of important pieces. Not all the kids are doing this. So frankly, I said to my son, what about the fifth-year program? When he walked across stage, well, this has been a long time, but he just got his diploma 2 days ago. What day is this? 2 days ago. And I said, what about that? And he goes, that's not for me. I want to go to the university. So it is not such a carrot that kids are biting it just because there's a free year, in quotes.
And if you can bring it to closure. Thank you, Representative.
So I just ask you to look at it through this, and the equity lens was mentioned. And I could not agree with that more. If we want to use an equity lens, this is a great policy to do that with, and the way we're reaching all of our kids with this program, I think, fulfills the mission of the equity lens. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, one factor that I think we're missing a little bit here is there's always been a fifth year available. When I went to high school, we used to laugh at the kids that were on the five-year plan.
I know, you picked on them.
Yeah, we did. That's a totally different thing from what the Dash 10 amendment would do.
Right.
It exempts those kinds of fifth-year programs that have traditionally given students another year if they need to graduate from high school. But what we're talking about is they've completed their high school work, they're doing college-level work in that fifth year, and the state's paying the dime. And we're not getting a penny from the feds, from Pell Grants and so on. That's what we're talking about. It's a totally different story. Absolutely, we ought to have an opportunity for students that are not doing well in high school and need another year to get their credits so that they get their graduate maybe 1 year late with their class. That's far superior, I think, in most cases than a GED. But that's different than what we're talking about here, where they've completed their high school work and they're staying on for another year doing college level work entirely on our dime.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I really believe that's the crux of the situation, and we'll probably hear throughout our testimony today, is different descriptions or definitions of what districts are calling a fifth-year program, because I don't think we have one definition at this point at all.
And may I, Madam
Please.
Chair, thank you. So, excellent point, and that's why I made some of the statements I made. Some of the numbers that I have seen are representing a broader spectrum than what you just discussed, Senator Monroe. And so I want us to be very cautious as we look at that and say, boy, look at all these people taking advantage of this program. Let's parse that out a little bit and really see what those numbers are. Thank you.
And with that, thank you, Representative. Much appreciation. We're going to bring our two of our best minds forward with Brian Reeder and Hilda Roselli. And regretfully, you two also only get 5 minutes each. Because I know, Brian, you can do it, but Hilda's got this propensity that I do, and it takes us longer to describe what we're talking about. Brian, let's clear the fog in the air.
Okay, let's do that. Co-Chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, Brian Reeder, Assistant Superintendent in the Research Office at the Department of Ed. First, I'll answer Representative Huffman's question. I don't know if you've seen the table that has been floating around that I put together to make the cost estimate. It came out at $9.5 million for this current 14-15 school year. And let me, and to answer your question directly, yes, we look at ADMW and the funding per ADMW.
Yeah,
that,
and Brian, is that on OLIS?
Where is that?
I never got that.
This isn't it. I have a copy. I'll post it after the meeting today. I have to dig through my files for it.
So the cost estimate here, the $9.5 million, is simply the total ADMW of those students identified as being in these programs times the formula funding per ADMW, which in 14-15 is right around $6,800. So that's 1,392 ADMW times roughly $6,800.
And Representative Huffman has a question, Brian.
Okay, a couple of things, Brian. $9.5 million versus $19 million, a little bit of difference
annual.
There.
Annual versus biennial.
Okay.
That's all that is.
And I was thinking when Rob was in a month or so ago testifying, I had asked the question, and he said that you guys really didn't have a good, strong grasp on how many students this was affected because of lack of reporting and stuff like that. Did I miss that point, or
Co-chairs,
do you have a good grasp on it?
Co-chairs Compton Monroe, Representative Huffman, we are in the process. Let me describe to you what we're doing. And first of all, let me say, when these numbers did not come from a casual survey that asked districts how many fifth-year students they have. These numbers came from our standard ADM data collection, which is very detailed, has very clear instructions. Districts are used to it. They've been doing it for decades. What we did is we added a new column, a new element to that data collection that said, if this student has completed 4 years of high school and has completed their graduation requirements, and they plan to come back next year, they plan to decline their diploma, receiving their diploma, and come back for a fifth year, check this box so that we can identify those students. We did it that way so we would not capture credit recovery students who haven't achieved all their graduation requirements. It's not intended to capture students who got all their credits by the end of their sophomore or junior year and are going to come back because they want to do a full 4 years of high school. It's only those students who completed 4 years, completed all their diploma requirements, but chose not to receive their diploma so they could come back, still be enrolled in the school district, and take advantage of earning college credits, primarily, I think, almost exclusively at a community college.
Okay, we've got Representative Huffman, Representative Springer, and Senator Rowland.
Real quick clarification.
Okay, you're going to jump in.
If you want, I mean, I just want a clarification, because a lot of people don't understand, how could you have completed graduation requirements and not graduated? And we gave opportunities to every school district to identify an advanced diploma, as well as a diploma for some of our special needs kids that was called an alternative diploma. So we gave different diplomas. So in an advanced diploma, it may require that you have college credits, that you have higher math, whatever the school district decides what an advanced diploma looks like is what it is. So kids can meet all their graduation requirements for the basic diploma, but they haven't finished their work for their advanced diploma. That's kind of the kids that mostly fit into this. And so that's a different way, and that's why they're declining their regular diploma, because they want an enhanced diploma.
Is that a correct definition?
Co-chairs Compton Monroe, we do see that, but
there may be others.
We also see cases where districts don't offer an advanced diploma, and the students are choosing not to accept their regular diploma.
Interesting.
We even had a case where students did accept their regular diplomas, then learned that they could come back for a fifth year, and went back to their high school and said, we'd like to give you our diplomas back. We don't want them. So I want to be really, really clear here that our data collection becomes mandatory at the end of this school year, 14-15. And what it says is, please indicate the students who have earned their diploma after 4 years and want to come back in the 15-16 school year. So those data we don't have yet. What we do have are data for 26 districts who started reporting those data a year early. They weren't required to, but they chose to. Now, Corvallis has argued that these numbers are wrong because they included credit recovery students, students who hadn't finished 4 years of high school yet. So that may be a misunderstanding of what they were supposed to report. But I have reviewed our instructions, and they seem quite clear. So we have some work to do on making sure that we get exactly the data we're asking for.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an ignorance question. Does ADMW include everything like ELL and other possibilities, or would those programs be in addition to ADMW?
Co-chairs Compton Monroe, Representative Huffman, ADMW captures all of that, the extra half weight for ESL, the extra weight for special ed, the extra quarter weight for low income. Okay. It includes all of those. Thanks. And for this group of 26 students, ADMW is about 15% higher than ADM, which doesn't include the weights yet.
But it's included in the $9.5 million
per
year.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I noticed, Doug, with some papers, and you referenced a document that was floating around, but it didn't float my way.
There are copies being made right now. I had to make sure I had the right document.
That would be awesome to be able to see those numbers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, Brian, if you could capsulize your any other comments.
I'll simply say that the department has not taken a position on these bills. You know, we take our lead from the governor's office now, since the governor is the superintendent of public instruction. But when the issue of not giving a student a diploma that they have already earned so that they could come back and go to community college and have that paid for by the formula revenue that their school district has received from our K-12 funding formula, my reaction was, that's probably a great program to serve kids, but it creates a funding problem for us. And that has been the department's only interest. And we're not talking about the value of the programs. We're certainly not talking about programs for students who have not yet earned their high school diploma. That's not what this is about, as Senator Monroe very clearly stated. It's not about that at all. Now, it may be that the solution to this is to integrate some of those programs so that we're serving students in a more comprehensive way, so that we don't have a proliferation of programs that serve this small group, and then another one serves this small group, and another one serves this small group. There may be value in integrating, but the real issue from the department's perspective on the students who have earned their diploma but haven't received it is one of funding primarily.
Senator Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Comp. So I have two questions. One is, are the students who are participating in this, do we have any information about whether or not they're doing it voluntarily, or are they being, this information being provided in some way to them? So that there would be, I'm concerned that there's maybe a little bit of a disadvantage, that some kids may be encouraged to participate and some kids don't even know what's going on.
Co-chairs Compton Monroe and Representative Taylor, that is a huge concern, because two things. I've had superintendents tell me personally that when I told them that the law doesn't prevent this, current law doesn't prevent districts from doing this, tell me, well, I don't think that's right, so I'm not going to do it in my district. I don't think that's an appropriate use of the state school fund, so I'm not going to do it in my district. And I do believe that there are districts who simply don't know that they could do this if they chose to. So we have some students in the state where this is available to them and some students where it's not available to them. And that, to me, in my mind, that creates an equity problem.
And then the second question I had was, are you aware of it? Are there districts that have, because it seems, I really appreciated the comments that you had when you were summarizing, that there's, when Senator Gelser was speaking, Representative Springer was speaking about that we have some students who are in these tough situations in their life circumstances, and we want to have them graduate. We want them to go on with their life. We're worried about them. We think they're on a bad path. There's all these circumstances, and so the intentions are all good. And folks are problem solving out there, and they're like, hey, well, let's go ahead and provide this fifth year and have them go to community college and get these credits. And I mean, I understand, you know, it's the intentions are good, but are there other, is there another funding mechanism where they could achieve the same goal, or the outcome could be the same, but not use the state school fund? This is my question.
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe and Representative Taylor, I think the Pell Grant issue that's already been mentioned is a good one. The reason students who've not received their diploma yet, even though they've met all the requirements, they can't get Pell Grants because one of the conditions of a Pell Grant is that you have a high school diploma, and they don't have one.
But the state is does not. There's another option for.
Well, I think there's options to explore. One of the great advantages that we are hearing school districts present in favor of these programs is that the assistance and the counseling and the help that the school district continues to give these students, even though they're attending pretty much all of their classes at a community college, combined with the help they get from the community college, makes a big difference in their success there. So that transition happens much better when school districts remain involved.
Okay.
So one option that might be explored is to say, well, give them their diploma so that they can get a Pell Grant, but make some resources available to school districts to assist those students in making that transition a little more smoothly, mm-hmm. so that they're still so that school districts still have a role in assisting that student, even though they've already graduated from high school and gotten their diploma.
Thank you.
On a strict budgetary basis, I think that would probably be cheaper for the state than the current situation.
Okay. And Representative Huffman said this is quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian, so am I too concerned over this? Since the department didn't come in with a bill concept to address this question, is the department not that concerned about what's going on and the possibility of additional fifth-year programs being added?
That's 20 seconds to ask the question.
Or was the department thinking that a legislator would come in and address it through a bill concept?
Co-chairs Compton Monroe, Representative Huffman, the department was and is concerned. I believe OEIB, and Hilda can speak to this, was working on a concept, and we participated in that process. And I guess I'll just defer to Hilda to describe that process and what came out of it. But, you know, when this actually started more than a decade ago with one or two students in one school district, and we noted it and realized that if it grew, it would represent a budgetary problem for the state school fund, and it has grown. We didn't bring our legislative concept. We were working cooperatively with this other group, and what came out of that apparently didn't resonate.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's very, very helpful. I think you filled in a number of spots that help clarify the picture, so I appreciate that. Dr. Roselli.
Good morning, co-chairs Comp and Monroe and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hilda Roselli, and I serve as the Director for College and Career Readiness at the Oregon Education Investment Board. And I'm here on behalf of Chief Education Officer Nancy Golden, who chaired the bipartisan Accelerated Learning Committee along with Senator Hass and Representative Huffman and others that was referenced earlier. I will make my comments primarily today to summarize the key ideas that were embedded within the Accelerated Learning Committee's recommendation for $15 million that resulted in a legislative report that then was crafted into Senate Bill 84 that then morphed into Senate Bill 418. And then I will also briefly describe how a revised budget of approximately $7 million might still improve the current situation for Oregon high school students. I will add one comment relative to the previous discussion, and that is that Brian is quite right in the fact that OEIB had convened a group back in 2013 and had become aware of the issue, tried to dig deeply into it, and really believe that the kinds of supports that were so effective in helping students needed to be there for students. And because of the intent of the Accelerated Learning Committee and its resulting legislation, felt that that would be where you could put some funding to support students along their path toward successful transition. The original accelerated learning legislation supported increased access for students, and at that time it was defined by the committee that accelerated learning would be a large umbrella term that would incorporate both dual credit, 2+2 courses with CTE focus, advanced placement, IB, and even other programs that enable students to earn college credit. The committee felt very strongly that every school should be able to provide access to at least 3 college-level courses or 9 credits for interested and eligible students at no additional cost to the student or family. That was not saying you couldn't do more beyond that, but they really wanted to make sure that there was equity, particularly when they looked and believed that there's approximately 200 high schools in the state that really don't have a full menu of options for students. The committee envisioned that this would involve creating a lot more partnerships between the high schools, colleges, and universities to ensure that whatever courses were offered would have the academic rigor and transferability for students so that the courses would provide the kinds of student success and advising and be transferable once the students moved on to post-secondary ed. There were amendments, as you can see, that were added even to 418 that addressed some earlier interpretations in Senate Bill 84. There was some discussion about, is this excluding an online delivery option? And we clarified that with many constituents that were quite concerned. That was not the intent at all. It was just to make sure that there were supports for students. Also, there was language added to improve flexibility for districts and post-secondary partnerships to develop in a more timely manner. The Dash 6 amendment specifically recommended that HEC provide statewide standards for any accelerated college credit programs that didn't have already nationally or state-approved standards in order to ensure academic rigor and to coordinate with the State Board of Ed and post-secondary institutions to identify appropriate instructor requirements specific to entry-level courses where needed. The OAIB was also recommended to identify model programs and best practices for encouraging student participation in these accelerated learning options, with special attention to those programs and practices that were tailored for students with specific background or characteristics that enabled them to really have benefit from these programs, particularly first-generation students. The proposed financial model that you have in front of you lays out on one side the playbook, as it is called, and on the other side, a quick view of a financial model that was originally intended for the $15 million. And it identifies that in addition to the existing ADMW that a district would be acquiring by engaging students in a dual credit course offered either at the high school site or at the community college or at the university site, that there would be some additional monies that would be coming to the school districts and their post-secondary partners. The very first block on the blue box describes that state school fund. The additional new funding specified are the remaining 3 boxes. One, that there would be an additional $20. This came from a lot of discussions per credit, for the first 9 hours. This came from a lot of discussions in which we realized how important those ongoing collaborations between faculty from post-secondary institutions and high schools are to developing strong coursework and ongoing dialogue around outcomes and improvements for students. It also included the fact that we realized that the textbooks that are required for college coursework are often quite expensive, and also there would be things like advising and even the reporting of data and transcripting that would come into play. In addition, we felt because this was intended to really reach those students who were underrepresented in post-secondary ed, there would be an additional $10 that could be set aside for the first 9 credits or that would be earned for the first 9 credits, and that would go specifically towards orientations to college and helping families understand the fiscal responsibility. Lastly, an additional 10 credits are $10 per first 9 credits for CTE costs that are much higher than some of your other general ed. The bottom shows that at that time, Senate Bill 84 was also considering some options for advanced placement and international baccalaureate additional costs. I have provided the co-chairs and the LFO staff a brief summary of how one might take that budget down to about $7 million. With an investment of 1.5 over the biennium focused on the alignment that we really have seen to be of such great value, where you bring faculty and instructors together. We know that costs money for time for faculty and high school teachers to get together and work on the rigor of those classes, the rubrics for evaluating student performance, et cetera. Second area, and I'm almost finished.
Well, I was going to say, if you could wrap up.
Second area of priority would be to still pay for those college-level courses for high school students. One of the ways you could do that would be to prioritize students by need or by economic background, et cetera. And in addition to that, that was looking at about 5.2 of the 7 million. That would serve approximately 30,000 students for the less than that, for 1 year. And then lastly, to really strengthen the college-going culture that we're finding to be so successful in schools that have been able to adopt programs like Aspire, Avid, Gear Up, et cetera, or have created their own programs. We really have seen that to be successful. I hope that was helpful for you at this point.
Yes, and one question from Senator Roblin.
Thank you very much. I just want to make sure that people understand that in the policy committee in which the fifth year was being discussed, it became clear that there weren't enough votes to pass out a moratorium or other things. And as Sarah said, they did come to an agreement. But in the middle of that, we did have a meeting with Hilda and most of these superintendents to come up, see if we could come up with a moratorium similar to what we have in this bill, except I think it had more to do with how to make that transition over the next few years. And we had a big discussion. I thought we had kind of an agreement. I talked to people. Apparently, the superintendents talked after that meeting and agreed they didn't think that was good enough. So I still didn't have the votes in my committee, so it died. And they came up with the idea that they would do it independently and come up with a plan at the next time. And I just want to make sure that was clear. And I appreciated Hilda and OAIB and their staff to try to pull that together to see if we could come up with a similar thing that we have here. So this conversation has happened in the policy committees. I was one of those people who felt we needed to do something, but I was looking at how we can get it. Didn't have the votes, and Sarah actually worked very hard at trying to come up with a plan to move forward. So that's kind of a history, and I thought people needed to know that. And I do appreciate Hilda brought those people together very quickly while we were there to try to come up with amendments that might work, but that did not work out.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Roselli. Thank you, Brian. And just so you know, what we're going to try to do here in the next 25 minutes is bring up our superintendents that we have in the room, and then on the next panel would be Ramon Ramirez and Susan Murray and Chemeketa Community College president. But let's have Rob Hess and Aaron Prince. And have I missed any other superintendents in the room? Okay. The people that are in the trenches.
All right. My name is Dr. Rob Hess, researcher, author, educational reformer, and current superintendent of Lebanon Community School District. And I know this is a budget group, so I'm going to talk about numbers and what we've been doing. We started our Beyond LHS program after the legislature passed expanded options in 2003. It took us a year to build it. We worked on relationships with our partner, and that bill allowed for dual enrollment, and we pursued this program for that purpose. And the purpose was to increase graduation rates. And so we've been able to do that over the years through this program by providing opportunities. And the last 3 years, I was looking at the numbers, and the numbers that we've got, the ADM that we've collected, dollars off ADM of kids involved in our programs over the last 3 years has been $2.9 million. 67% of that went back to LBCC for books, tuition, fees. Another 10 to 15%, depending on the year, went to supporting the kids in that program. So of the 150 students in the program, every single student has a plan and profile. They get regular grade checkups. They get counseling. They get made sure they're in the right courses, that they've got the plan to achieve their goal of getting a degree. And so I've taken the 40-40-20 seriously. I've taken P20 seriously. And this program is the single best reform, the single best reform in Oregon to make that 12 to grade 13 connection. We've got to build this link. These programs work. And that's why we can get busloads of kids up here. That's why we can show you result after result after result, is because they work. And we are more than happy to meet with anyone and everyone to figure out ways to systemize it so that every student in Oregon gets this chance and to make it as most cost effective as possible. I haven't been invited to any of those meetings. All these plans, these years of development, no one asked me. So I'm more than happy to come and participate and help. And all the people have done these programs can help. We've learned a ton in 12 years. And the legislature every year gives money to go nowhere grants, things that don't work, things that are unproven. This is proven. This works.
Rob, you're not making points.
Oh, sorry. Let me know when my time is up.
No, anyways, your time's okay.
All I want to say is that the percent of money that doesn't go to the college, that doesn't go to you know, the staff that support it, goes to cover our losses, because this program costs us money to operate, because we're serving kids not only beyond the 4 years, but we're also serving kids that it makes sense for within the 4 years. Kids with autism, kids that don't fit in high school, kids that would have dropped out. We send them to LBCC. They're successful. And we operate that at a loss, because we would have held on to that kid to try to make it work in the high school, but it wouldn't. So it's not, you can't just pull numbers from a computer and make a decision on these programs. You have to bring people into a room and ask them. So that's all I ask. I want to be included.
Thank you. And congratulations on having an increase of 12% at your graduation.
Well, ours actually went up over 20%, so we're pretty excited about that. We're, we're no longer
12 was
average.
Corvallis.
Yeah. Oh, 12 was Corvallis.
Yeah, 12 was Corvallis. Yeah, we're in the 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sure their parents are happy too.
Yeah, we've got a lot of happy parents.
Erin.
Good. Hello, co-chair Monroe, and also comp. I would like to thank you for the time. Erin Prince, superintendent in Corvallis. We are new to the fifth year programs. This is our second year, and I'm here to share some pretty dramatic results. First of all, just to clarify with Mr. Reeder's conversation around data, we have students that are going toward their advanced diplomas. As I know Senator Roblin addressed, we have students that are dual credit. They have not received their full diploma yet. We're moving them onto LBCC campus because the traditional high school does not fit, so they're doing simultaneous both. We have students that are modified diploma that are choosing not to accept the modified diploma and continue to work for their standard diploma while getting college credit. So there's a so this is not a one-size-fits-all data collection. You can't just ask one question. So we'd be more than happy to work with ODE on what data do they want and how does that collection happen. We have not been asked to join that effort. The other piece I would like to share with you is that 2 years ago, we have an alternative program pathway, not an extra high school, but it's called College Hill. We had zero of our students go on to college. Next year, 60%. In 2 years, this is what the fifth year has brought. Hope, we're getting kids to college, we're getting kids graduated. 4 years ago, I entered Corvallis as superintendent. 68% of our students were graduating on time in Corvallis. That's 32% of our students were not being met in graduation. And at last year, 84% on time. Graduation. And our fifth year completion rates skyrocketed as well. The data does not lie. It's showing that we're being transformational. We're getting after it. What wakes me up at night are the faces of our kids that we're not meeting their needs in the traditional model. We're doing well by 70%. We're totally missing the mark for 30%. For Corvallis, we're about a $250,000 a year investment in fifth-year programs. We provide an extra teacher, counselor, assistant, and coordinator. So there is no $4,000 per student going into our bank. Our board is very dedicated to put funds toward the kids that are missing the mark and we're not meeting their needs. So this is an investment. Our issue is not that we believe you don't believe in these programs. We know you do. We know that superintendents across the board would love to offer these programs. We also know they're not sustainable funding-wise. Senator Roblin, Senator Monroe, you are part of our commitment to the Senate House Education Committee that we will be part of the group. We were part of the group that you referred to. It was a productive 2 or 3 hours, yet we were missing really key link people. And so our issue here is with the amendment. We agree, and Sarah Gelser, Senator Gelser, really nailed it. We agree that a moratorium would be appropriate. We understand the sustainability piece of this. I feel bad for our counterparts because they really truly see the assets of this. However, that gives us time and our commitment to put together a work group. COSA, with Craig Hawkins' blessing, said they are behind this. They will help support put this group together with legislators, with superintendents, people that need to be there. What we take issue with is the actual phase-out language. Strike that language, and we're good. That's what fires us up. That's what kept me up at night. Last night I was awake all night. It's the phase-out language, because that basically says we are not committed to have something in place to continue with this. That phase out gives the kids that are lined up for this, knowing that they have hope, no hope. Yeah. And so that's the piece we take issue with. Otherwise, we support and we are committed. We're at the table. We would invite you to join us. We can make this work for all kids. Yeah. So that's our ask today.
Yeah, that phase out language really is the line in the sand for us, because that's the language that says you're being sneaky, you're not doing things right, this isn't good for kids. These work for kids, they can work for kids, they will work for kids. Every district, every student in the state should have a chance. It's better than full day kindergarten. We've done full day kindergarten for 8 years. These results are better. It's better than early literacy. It's the best thing we have going on. And what's great is it just came from the people. It came from the system. No one came with the idea. It just grown over time, and it works. So we're excited about the future our kids have in this state with a program like this.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your leadership in your districts. Okay. Regretfully, this will be our last panel, and I, as shared, Ramon Ramirez, if you come forward, and Susan Murray, and Miguel Elias, are you testifying? No?
No.
Okay. And Megan Moyer from Portland Community College, do you want to come up, also find a chair and pull it forward? Thank you. And Susan, who's going to start, you or Ramon?
I think I will. Thank you. Good morning, Representative Comp and Representative Monroe. I am, for the record, Susan Murray. I'm an executive dean at Chemeketa Community College in Salem, Oregon. And we have worked with fifth-year programs as defined by many in many different ways through our district for about 10 years, with the primary emphasis on helping our students transition into community college when they had no other options. And this does include a population that perhaps would have dropped out of high school and was retrieved, that may not be eligible for Pell Grants in our Woodburn and Jervis area, where barriers of poverty and first-generation attenders of college really never thought that they could go to Chemeketa. And what we've found is that the fifth-year program has made a significant difference in both our enrollment at Chemeketa and their success rate at Chemeketa, but also in the dropout rates in the communities in which we are serving and offering fifth-year programs. The programs we offer often do use the advanced diploma method, so students are allowed to increase their college credits by attending a college program, a real program that makes them able to adapt to the college culture. It's easy for many students who have been encouraged to go to college all their life, the intention is they're on that road, to probably adapt much more easily to a college culture. But for students whose parents do not understand college, who may not support college, and may not understand the value of college, going to college itself without support is impossible. Fifth-year programs have created tremendously strong partnerships between school districts and community colleges. Some other initiatives encouraging dual enrollment have not necessarily done this and caused some dissonance, but I can tell you absolutely that with our districts, community colleges and partners are partners with the superintendents, and we stand shoulder to shoulder to identify at-risk youth, disenfranchised youth, underrepresented populations, and move them into that first year. I can tell you, and I've been recording our outcomes for the last 6 years, I can give you outcomes for 6 years that are significant. When we're talking about students who struggle to get through high school, then come to us, complete a full year of college, we're talking in the 85% completion rate. We also track transition to college and entrance into our CTE programs. Fifth year is really an opportunity for our high schools whose CTE, career technical education programs, have been totally dismantled. Well, we can provide that opportunity, and we do. There are so many wonderful efforts across this state, and I applaud everyone's intention in helping students get more college credits. And many of them are currently being funded as pilot programs and experiments, and data will be collected in the next few years. I do applaud and support those efforts. I also want to say, for over 10 years, we've had fifth-year programs. We have collected outcomes. We do deal with the most disenfranchised students across this state, primarily in poor rural districts or in districts where poverty is high or they've been inordinately impacted by the recession. And that certainly does change college.
And effort. Susan, I'd like, if that's your closure, that would be wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Ramon?
Yeah. thank you, Co-Chair Comp and Co-Chair Monroe and members of the committee. My name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm the president of the Oregon Farmworker Union, PICUN. It's a real honor and pleasure for me to be here to testify. I want to talk about our experience with a fifth-year program. I do have some concerns about the Dash 10 amendments. I want to highlight some of the things that we have done in the community, as Co-Chair Comp understands and knows. She was part of the work that we did in Woodburn. We, about 12 years ago, I believe, came together under the leadership of our superintendent, Reeves, to start looking at ways that we can attack and we could we can increase the high school or we can increase the graduation rate in our high school. We had the lowest in the state in Woodburn, in the Woodburn School District. And so we partnered with a community college, Temecula Community College, with our school district and community organizations. We are the farm worker unions, but we decided that we wanted to take the education issue on. And as a result, we've built two institutions of higher of education in our community, one of them completely funded without any help from the state or federal government. It's all private money, right? And the Capacis Leadership Institute. In fact, the HEC met there about 3 months ago. It's the first green and passive building in Oregon and the fifth in the country at the time that it was completed in 2010. So, and then we have the Cipriano Education Center at the Nuevo Amanecer Housing Project. It's a beautiful center, and we are creating these partnerships. And the reason why is because we wanted to increase the graduation rate. We wanted to make our Woodburn School District one of the most productive in the states. And I'll tell you that just recently an Oregonian reported that Woodburn School District has one of the highest graduation rates in the state. And one of the tools that we used, right, is building that community partnership with the school district, doing mentorship programs. I have personally referred people to the fifth-year program, people that were had dropped out of school. I have also recruited Dreamers who are here under the color of law but can't qualify for Pell Grants, right? I've encouraged them personally to stay in school so that they can get college credits. These kids were brought here by their parents at an early age, and they're here under color of law, under what's called DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And so this program has benefited them. But I got to say that that we are here to advocate for the continuation of that program, because that's part of our toolbox that we have. And to see it sunset or to be eliminated, I think would be have a devastating effect on our community. I just want to end by saying that when we talk about equity, 80% of our folks that are part of the program at Chemeketa Community College are Latino. About 10% are Russian, right? We're talking about 40 to 60 kids, but we're talking about more than that, because we're talking about the parents. We're talking about these kids are a role model for others who have dropped out, right? And they've seen these kids graduate, right? The program has been in existence for over 10 years, right? So we've had a successful graduation rate, and they become a role model for other people to come back to and finish their high school. That's why we have one of we had the highest amount of Latinos graduate from Woodburn High School in the history of Woodburn School District ever in 2015. So I would end by saying that we want to see the continuation of the fifth-year program. I understand that there's financial barriers here, that there's not enough money, but at least we should be able to work together and come to consensus about how we can keep the most successful programs. You heard from Lebanon, you heard from Corvallis, you've heard from Woodburn. There are some successful programs going on here. Let's take the good of what's happened in those communities and let's work together to see if we could duplicate that more effectively throughout the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ramon. Thank you, Susan. And Megan, I'm going to dismiss Susan and Ramon. And do we have Elizabeth Lundy here? Did you want to speak briefly with Megan about community college information? Elizabeth?
Can
I pass it to
Andrea?
No, we're not doing it. Andrea? Okay. Okay, thank you. Megan.
Chairs Comp, Monroe, members of the
committee. Our
closer?
Yeah.
Okay. For the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm the Government Relations Director of Portland Community College, and I want to address both Senate Bill 418A and the -10 amendments. Portland Community College has mixed feelings about both. We are strongly supportive of creating accelerated learning opportunities for students. We very much appreciate trying to build some uniformity statewide related to standards. We take those very seriously as an institution, at times to our detriment, because it is labor intensive, but we strongly support that any student who's going to have a course transcripted by PCC, that it be accepted wherever they choose to attend higher education, and that it actually build the foundation necessary for their continued coursework, and that is labor intensive. We have struggled with our partners, our K-12 partners. We value our relationships with them and want desperately to help them build dual credit and accelerated learning opportunities. But we have been financially challenged at Portland Community College. And it's largely complicated. PCC is one of three community colleges that is above the enrollment cap, which means that for additional students that enroll, we do not get additional state funds. So our work on dual credit is largely uncompensated, which has limited our staff capacity to help design and approve courses with students. And so our concern is that without an appropriate funding mechanism, our ability to meet the requirements of 418 would be extremely difficult, truthfully. It does take a tremendous amount of coordination with high school faculty and our faculty to align coursework, to make sure outcomes are at a college level. A lot of that is time donated by our faculty, but it is administratively burdensome, and we frankly have two staff that do over 550 dual credit courses. Also, I think what has been a little bit lacking in this conversation, but is very true for Portland Community College, and Shemekina mentioned it, was that the majority of our dual credit is actually in CTE. And we're proud of that. It really can be a wonderful way for people to, while still in high school, see their path, get started on a CTE program where those credits directly count toward a certificate or associate's degree in that technical field. But it is much more expensive to set those up. We do not want to lose that. We think it's incredibly valuable. It's essential to our middle 40 in Oregon, and it creates opportunities for higher learning toward populations that may not see themselves as pursuing higher education. So we want that to still be central. My last comments relate to our concerns about piecemealing an approach to accelerated learning. Portland Community College currently does not participate in a fifth-year program, but we have been approached by some districts to just have a conversation because they want to create opportunities for their students. I think everyone testified about their fifth-year programs care deeply about their students and want to create opportunities. We have not committed to anything. We do not have a plan for the fall, but to have the largest community college, we are one-third of all enrolled community college students are at Portland Community College. People see us as the behemoth. Oh, if PCC goes there, it'll break the bank. Our students are just as deserving of opportunity. We want to see a consistent policy for funding accelerated learning statewide. We are open to the right way to do that, but we don't want to see those students of the PCC service district not be availed to opportunities that are available to other students around the state. So I implore you to find a consistent mechanism that is available to all Oregon high schools to facilitate accelerated learning. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. And I'm sure that we have every member on this dais that would like to make some closing comments, but our time is out. And what I would share is that will we bring both these bills?
Yes,
for available next
Madam Chair,
week?
There were a number of people on Senate Bill 418 that had signed up. Most of them are in the building on a regular basis. It will be scheduled as invited testimony only, limited to the folks on this list sometime next week. And the same with 3166. It will be scheduled early next week. Please watch your schedules. I got a list of bills that were referred to the committee last night. At this time, I had not planned for a Monday meeting, but I need to take a look at the workload. But Tuesday and Wednesday for sure are full. But watch for Monday. We're working on a 24-hour notice, so I'd be posting sometime today for that, most likely.
Thank you. And before I close the public hearing, I'm going to use my co-chair prerogative and share with people here and anybody that might be watching. As somebody that started teaching in Woodburn School District in 1990 and knowing that our graduation rates were the lowest in the state, it was really hard. And yet my joy of this past week was to sit Friday evening and watch the graduation at Woodburn High School, where nearly 380 students graduated, and about 80 of those students would not have graduated without programs like this and the support of our community. These things, these programs do bring communities together, and seriously, parents that had lost faith in our education system in different ways, they're there, and I just appreciate all the work that's been done in Senator Roblin's committee, and I know we are working on this policy concept here in a budget committee. It's not our first time that we've gotten to work on a policy, but I assure everyone in this room, we are listening. We, goodbye.
Love you, Madam Chair.
Okay, just a minute. Let me close then. I'm going to close, but thank you, all of you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 418, House Bill 3166. We are adjourned. See you all next week. See you all next week.